This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 30th, 2026. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 463. It's late summer, and the BC Conservative caucus is evaporating. Good news for the NDP, bad news for those who want a new government by 2028. My guest is Jordan Bateman, Vice President of the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association and former BC Director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. May 30th, 2026, at the Conservative Party of BC Leadership Convention in Vancouver.
The individual in first place has 4,696.51, 51%. Ladies and gentlemen, your next leader and Premier of British Columbia, Carrie Lynn Findlay.
The Conservative Party of BC will stand together because we know that we can make a difference. We can fight back and we can deliver real change. We'll do it, all of us, together. I see passion and commitment. I see people who are not prepared to give up on their communities. I see people who believe that BC can still be a beacon of opportunity, functional, safe, affordable, and family-friendly.
That was then, this is now. BC Wildfire Service isn't the only one trying to put out fires this summer. As of August 27th, six MLAs who were elected in 2024 lost confidence in Conservative leader Carrie Lynn Findlay and have quit the opposition caucus. Peter Milibar, Ian Payton, Rosalind Bird, Teresa Watt, Brennan Day, and Bruce Banman. A seventh, Rhianne Gasper, quit as an MLA so that Findlay could run in the Abbotsford Mission by-election. Gasper became Deputy Chief of Staff. There have also been changes on the party board and at the party head office. A new president and a new executive director. Meanwhile, NDP Premier David Eby is hoping to capitalize on the Findlay follies, which coincide with the Trump trade war.
We're headed into legislative session. The right continues to fracture. Really, British Columbians are focused on a government that's working for them. We're committed to work for them. We are not looking to an early election. We're looking to delivering for British Columbians in the middle of an unprecedented trade war from our closest friend and ally, the United States, that is attacking BC families, and they need our support.
But people on the right of center, federal conservatives, federal liberals, people who used to be involved in the BC Liberals and BC United, people who became Conservative Party of BC members are concerned. They got together. Some of them got together August 26th for an emergency meeting at a White Spot restaurant in downtown Vancouver to figure out what to do. One of them was Jordan Bateman, who's the Vice President of Communications and Advocacy with the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association of British Columbia, Canada's biggest construction association. He's also former BC Director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. And welcome back to the podcast, Jordan. First of all, get the important question out of the way. What was on the menu at the White Spot?
You know, Bob, I'm sad to report that there was no food in the room. We had some waters and that was about it. This was a business meeting, not a chance to sample the delicious legendary platter.
I'm hearing from one source, though, that there was coffee and croissants and cookies. The triple C's, not the triple O's.
Ooh, I'll have to double check that. There were 60 people in the room, and I think they were expecting more like 20, 25. So it was standing room only, and I got in there, I think it started at 3. I got in there like 2:59. So it's possible that there was some snacks out that disappeared before I got there.
Despite the menu, it was Chris Gillis of Global BC that said it was actually triple O, operatives offering options. Options on what to do next, whether to save the Conservatives, take over Centre BC, resurrect BC United. What are the options? What did the group come away with?
It was everything from, you know, rally behind KLF all the way to creating a new party. And, you know, I don't think there was definitely no decisions made in the room. The point of the conversation was, first of all, to start having it, to reconnect folks who maybe haven't seen each other in a long time. Also to, you know, for me, like the thing I took away was, you know, I felt optimistic. Like, you know, the frustration in me had been growing, the concern had been growing about the next election, can't afford another 4 years of David Eby. And suddenly I was in a room with, you know, 60 other folks who feel the same way. And I have to admit that was certainly a cause for optimism. So, you know, there was no decisions made. I think everyone's gone away to kind of mull it over. I suspect there'll be future meetings, hopefully in other BC restaurant landmarks, you know, maybe the Keg, good old Langley Restaurant Company. Perhaps there'll be other meetings going forward to kind of hone in on the actual directions.
Who are some of the names that people might recognize, and who are some of the people that were working and have been working behind the scenes in the Conservatives and BC United and BC Liberals in years past that came together for this meeting?
Well, we made an agreement in the room that we wouldn't disclose what was discussed in the room and who was there. But I can tell you who was not there, and who was not there was, you know, any current MLA, any former premier. There weren't any, current elected officials. I think Global had Colin Hanson made a comment. He was the closest thing to an elected official. And I, you know, it's probably been what, 10, 12 years since he served as finance minister. But other than that, it was, you know, organizers, strategists, some business folks, people from all across the political spectrum who are coming together to say, we can't afford more David Eby, and we've got to make sure that, you know, the next kick at the election, we win and move Eby on.
So it's 2 years until the next election. We're basically in midterm right now. Some people would ask why the concern now, especially those who are Kerry Lynn Findlay supporters, who would say that they've got plenty of time to sort this out. But why the concern now?
Well, first of all, the electoral calendar is of no interest or consequence to the NDP. They'll call an election and whenever it's the best for them. And, you know, David Eby waited too long last time, and you can bet he's kicking himself for that. Like, he won't make that mistake again. And even John Horgan, who looks very good in comparison to David Eby, even John Horgan advanced it based on his own political interests. So the calendar doesn't matter. What matters is the warning lights. So, you know, I'm a political guy. I see the car, the Conservative Party, and then, you know, the visible public stuff. But, you know, I want to look under the hood. And when, you know, we look under the hood, we see donations have cratered to just a few hundred dollars a week. We see expenses have gone way up. Let's talk of maybe $40,000 a month in burn rate, mainly around, things for the new leader. There's been a complete staff turnover, which is a lot of institutional knowledge to walk out that door. There are issues within caucus, obviously. We've seen 5 very competent, very different MLAs leave, for important reasons. Each of them had their own different reasons for leaving. There's rumors of more. We had that tape that came out with the former director of operations, handpicked by the new leader to run the operations of the party. And he said it was a pretty disgusting tape as far as, you know, crass political grift, to be honest. So, you know, he was clearly, the leader agreed, fired him within 20 minutes of the tape going public, but other people were in that room. So who was in that room and didn't flag it? Like, who allowed this to go on? So these are all things that, you know, if you pop the hood of the BC Conservative Party, and dropping poll numbers, you look at it and go, holy smokes, this engine is falling to pieces in front of us. I can't afford, you know, my family can't afford, the companies that make up ICBA, the construction contractors, the folks building homes and roads and infrastructure. Like, we cannot afford another 4 years of NDP government. They've become so ham-fisted in how they and how they're running the province, and so expensive in how they're running the province, that we have to fix it. So that's really, you know, the impetus for me was like, man, we've got to find a better option, a more fiscally responsible option. I was hoping it was the BC Conservatives. Certainly supported them the last couple of years to try to get them there, but it's clear, you know, becoming very clear to me now that, you know, that particular vehicle is not roadworthy.
Why August 26th? What was the move that really pushed people to come together and make this happen?
I think it was probably the hiring decisions that were made. Despite waving concern flags, you know, that was problematic. We even talked about the media, like media have keen interest in this. They saw me leaving the meeting. I've probably done more mainstream media interviews today than, you know, the leader has done since she was elected, right? Like there's just so many problems there. So, you know, these things were mounting. I think, you know, the organizers, you know, talking to a bunch of different people, we're hearing from folks and said, okay, well, let's try to get a room together and try to start to hash out where we go from here.
Yeah, Finley and her entourage and some of her MLAs went to the Calgary Stampede, but haven't done much in the way of any high-profile tours around British Columbia. I know they popped into Prince George. They've been to a few other locations, I think the Okanagan, but we've seen what Mike Bernier has done in his short time as leader of Centre BC, which has no seats, and him and his pickup truck tour. Well, we haven't seen anything similar in an organized fashion by Carrie Lynn Findlay. And summertime in British Columbia is a great time for politics. So all the barbecues and the you know, festivals, fairs, all the events that someone can go and meet British Columbians at, the parades. And we just haven't seen that from an organized fashion. It hasn't been promoted at all from Carrie Lynn Findlay. And this has been quite an underwhelming first 100 days of a leadership.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair to say. I don't get the sense from riding associations that they're having interactions with the leader. You know, it's British Columbia is a huge province, and you've got to make the effort to go places. And you're exactly right. Summer it's far better to travel to Fort St. John in the summer and chat with folks than it is in January and February. It just logistically, it's, you know, the flights are more regular. Like, these are important parts of the of being a leader of a provincial party. So for me, it's you have to engage the grassroots. You also have to engage groups like ICBA, and we haven't heard from the leader. We've been stalwarts of the free enterprise movement in British Columbia since, gosh, before Expo 86, you know, through all of its many incarnations, whether it was SOCRED or BC Liberal or BC United and the Conservative Party of BC, we've been stalwarts of that. But we haven't been engaged. Leaders hasn't picked up the phone and said, you know, what's of importance to the construction contractors out there, to the small businesses powering the economy. And we have a lot of concerns. We have a lot of concerns in that industry. Some we'll talk about later when we talk about Trump tariffs.
Yeah, you mentioned that the Conservatives fundraising is suffering, but on the other end of the spectrum, the NDP has quite a big war chest. They've boasted about that. And because they're the governing party, they also have the machinery of government that they can use to pump up their own party's tires and the profile of their own politicians. Do you think that EB could call an election sooner to take advantage of the weakened Conservatives, despite what he said, his denial when asked about it this week? Do you think David Eby would take a chance in a short time period, say before the municipal elections in October or shortly after?
I think if he's has any political IQ at all, he's got to be considering it. Like, it would make sense to go when they're split. He waited too long last time in his supporters' minds, and John Rustad almost pipped him at the post. And so you got to go at some point. I think it's cynical. I don't like it. I think it would be very crass politics, but it would be a story for a few days, and then we, you know, end up kind of diverging into the issues. You know, so yeah, he's got to be thinking about it. And that's the untold story here is, you know, the NDP have always done a better job of hiding their internal fighting better than the free enterprise side. And there's a lot of going on there. You know, EB is not in control of his membership. Avi Lewis is in control of the NDP membership. When you're a federal NDP member, you're a provincial NDP member, they just had a federal race. It's the Avi Lewis group that is really in charge of it. And they're dragging him to the left as best they can, especially on these environmental issues, especially on the major projects that Mark Carney would like to get through. And you see, you know, even in his own cabinet, he can't convince people that, you know, a project like expanding the Tilbury LNG plant, something that's been there for decades and never had a problem. You know, he can't even convince his own cabinet to stay on board for that. So these are big problems for David Eby. And, you know, what solves problems in politics? Winning. So, you know, if he sees a chance to go to the polls and he'll do what he always does, blame Donald Trump. I need to go to the polls. I need a strong mandate to fight Donald Trump. But, you know, this is a guy who seems more excited to be on CNN these days than is to actually govern the finances of British Columbia.
And, you know, the recent research co-poll showed that the same big three double digits issues dominate, the same issues that were dominating back in 2024 when the provincial election was happening. The issues that a lot of British Columbians say David Eby is failing on, yet a lot of British Columbians, despite his unpopularity, see him still as a viable premier, as someone that they might vote for just because the concern with the opposition, you know, housing, poverty, homelessness, economy and jobs and healthcare, those are the three main issues that are weighing the minds of British Columbians. Yet David Eby seems to not be resonating and not be fixing any of those issues.
Oh, you're exactly right. And that's what's so frustrating for so many of those people who were in the room the other night is, you know, there is a path to victory. These are significant issues. These aren't like nice to have issues. Healthcare is a core issue. You know, the government finances, taxes, the burden on employers, those are core issues, right? There's the ability there to address them and to provide a different opportunity path. But in politics, you know, you're running against a finite opponent. And, you know, if you're a 3 out of 10 and your opponent's a 2 out of 10, well, you know, it's a low bar to get over, but congratulations, you got over it. So that is, again, another significant problem. We haven't heard of the Conservative camp or the Conservative leader much concern about affordability, much concern about healthcare, much concern about anything except, the latest X trending topics. That to me is, you know, look, there are no doubt many social issues in BC that we got to address, and there are things the NDP have done that I do not like, and we got to fix them. But right now, the existential threat to British Columbia is the economy and the way the government has misspent money, the rising cost of infrastructure, the fact that they bloated the bureaucracy and got not a single better service out of it. These are the like really core bread and butter issues because now they're starting to appear on people's kitchen tables. You know, I'm involved in a ball hockey association. You know, registration was down. Why was registration down in a growing community? It was down because people can't afford to put their kids in sports, and we're the cheapest sport around. So like, these are the kind of things that like it's landing on folks. And you know, we have to address them. And that's why this is such a missed opportunity. It's like, you could have come out and had a great summer talking about these issues, really placing yourself front and center on them. And instead, you know, you went to friendly podcasts and, you know, kind of spoke in on topics that were of interest to those folks, but not to the broader base of the public.
The legislature reopens October 5th, and Carrie Lynn Findley is probably not going to be there for quite a while because David Eby does have up to 6 months to call that by-election in Abbotsford Mission, and there's no guarantee in that by-election either because that's a riding previously held by an NDP MLA. But Heather Maas from Chilliwack will be the leader in the House, and we don't quite know how she'll lead the team within question period, how aggressive she might be. That'll be something we'll be watching when the legislature reopens in October. But can the Conservatives be ready to hold the NDP accountable when they're in so much turmoil right now? Can they turn things around in 6 weeks? I mean, Rafe Mayer always said 6 weeks is a lifetime in politics, but BC politics is different from other places.
It'll take a Herculean effort by whatever strong MLAs they have left at that time. You know, I don't want to name names because for all we know, but while we're recording, they've left. But, you know, there are some strong MLAs still in that group, and they are going to have to do the lion's share of work. Now, the question is, those strong MLAs weren't rewarded with leadership positions by the new leader. And, you know, so are they going to be given the opportunity to raise questions in question period? Is this going to continue to be very much, you know, a showcase for the folks who supported the leader in the leadership race? Or, you know, are they going to be willing to let other voices speak up in the legislature? The jury's out. You know, the shame of it is the last session they had was pretty outstanding from an opposition point of view. They were holding them to account. They were breaking stories, had great research, were tying it to stories of real British Columbians who were in the building often. You know, it's a lot harder for a minister to downplay certain issues when, you know, they look up and they can see the faces of the people who that affects and who know the issue better than even the minister does. So the opposition was doing such a strong job on that, showcasing the entire bench, not just a handful of folks. And that feels like it's gone. And this is where staff turnover is really concerning, is, you know, our understanding is that, you know, most of the staff have been turned over, certainly the research staff, many of who did some of this really good work, not because of their performance, but because maybe in the past they had worked for this person or maybe in the past they worked for that person. And instead we've got the, you know, the Apollos of the world who took over and couldn't even last, you know, a few weeks.
Now, this political upheaval in British Columbia happens at a time when Canada and the U.S. are at a trade war. After Prime Minister Mark Carney walked away on August 21st from the deal that was on the table from the Trump administration after hours and hours and days of negotiations to try to avert the tariffs that were announced the day after Carney and Trump were at the FIFA World Cup final back in July. Now, the ICBA has analyzed what it means for members, what it means for companies, what it means for workers. This trade war is making Canadian goods in the U.S., like cement, plywood, doors, and furniture, more expensive, but Canada has retaliated, so that means it's going to be a tax on Canadian builders.
Yeah, yeah, this is really the bad news that came out of Tuesday, is the counter-tariff list came out, and it matched the Trump tariff list. And what that means is, you know, there are about 400 different line items. They call them harmonization codes in import-export language. 400 different things that affect construction. Everything from appliances, so there's one that actually affects more than construction. You know, if you your fridge breaks down in a few weeks and you replace it with an American-made fridge, that fridge may be $2,000 today, it'll be $2,500 in 2 weeks. So, you know, everything from like staple guns are going to be taxed, tariffed at 50%, nuts and bolts, but also, you know, flooring, steel, like basically, you know, tons and tons of different inputs into construction. And the analysis has been, you know, probably an 8 to 10% increase in construction costs. Well, you know, Bob, this comes at a time where like construction costs are already too high, especially in home building. You can't build a home for what you can sell it for, right? Like there's no margin to be made there. So housing starts at essentially flatline. Condos, you know, the ones that are in process are being finished, but there's nothing new coming into the pipeline. It's a municipal election year. Like my caution to candidates promising all sorts of infrastructure and whatnot is you need to understand things are going to be 8 to 10% more expensive because of the Trump tariff or the counter tariffs. So all of this is kind of in the mix now. And, you know, for contractors, like our advice was, you know, folks, you need to go and you need to figure out your 20 most expensive inputs that you're buying. How many of them are coming from the United States? Are they coming through the United States, like from Asia, and they go to the United States and to you? In that case, they're fine. They're not tariffed. But if they're starting in the United States coming to you, they are tariffed. You got to, you know, find different options, different things. Well, you're talking about unwinding a decades, you know, a supply chain decades in the making. In just a couple of weeks, like that is a huge challenge for anyone, let alone, you know, a construction company just trying to, you know, finish the jobs that they're on right now.
Is that really the message that people who are company owners, even workers themselves, they need to do research to find out what is going to cost them more and what their plan B might be? Is there anything else they can do to protect themselves at this this very sensitive time?
Yeah, they've got to, when they're doing estimates, they need to put in, you know, instead of doing maybe a 30-day price hold, like maybe it's a 15-day because things are changing so rapidly. You know, you may want to have language in there around tariffs in contracts you sign if you can. Everything changes so fast. And I think one of the problems we're facing right now is Trump changes on a whim all the time. And so there's this kind of sense like, well, I'll worry about it when it starts, when it actually happens. Our feeling on this is different. Like this is deep. This is deepening. You know, welcome to Lake America today, and Lake Ontario renamed Lake America. We should all be thinking about what we can rename Canada. Maybe it, not Niagara Falls. Maybe it's Canada Falls. Maybe it's all sorts of things. But like, this is more than your average like trade slap fight. This is a big, deep fissure that is opening, and I don't think it's going to be repaired even in the midterms. I don't think it'll be repaired even if there was a Democrat in the White House next time. Like, the Americans have shifted their view on trade. The era of free trade is over. So even if we get lucky and, you know, maybe these counter tariffs don't come on right away, they could come on later. You just don't know when this is going to break down. So again, our advice to our folks is like, do your homework, find out where your stuff is coming from. And, you know, if it's originating in the United States and it's on that tariff list, start hunting down different options now. You know, the feds have promised a program where, like, if you can't replace it with a non-American made thing, there might be some financial aid. That could be wildly more than they can actually handle in finances. So, you know, don't count on that. That's a nice to have if you can get it. You got to do the homework and see if you can find a different path.
And it might make it a little more difficult and a little more expensive for people to enjoy their pastimes, enjoy their hobbies. You're actually a co-owner of the Green Bay Packers, one of 538,967 people who have shares in the Green Bay Packers. Didn't have a great season last year. They ended in a slump.
Yep.
Were seeded seventh in the playoffs for three straight years. Lost to the Bears. Last year was injury plagued.
Yeah.
What are the prospects for this season for cheeseheads like you?
Well, the thing I would remind you, Bob, is that the Green Bay Packers, the greatest franchise in the history of professional football, they were 9-3-1 and leading by two touchdowns in Denver. And on their way, looking like a Super Bowl contender, and Christian Watson was taken off the field in an ambulance. In the next series, Xavier McKinney drops a interception, and the play after that, Micah Parsons, one of the top defensive players in the league, blew out his ACL. And that changed everything. You know, having already endured the loss of Tucker Kraft, a top three tight end. So definite problems last year. Did not finish the way we wanted. This year, I think, you know, everyone is healthy except for Micah starting the season. Kraft will come in on a snap count to start, but he'll be there week one. It really is about the first 6 weeks hanging on. You know, if you can go 3-3 the first 6 weeks and then bring back Micah, you'll kind of cruise all along. So, you know, that'll be key. I will say this, though. By all indications, Coach LaFleur is wanting to, you know, turn the keys over, so to speak, to Jordan Love and let him lead this team. The stats show that he was one of the most efficient quarterbacks, but also one of the ones most willing to take the deep shot. Despite the talk of his turnovers, he only had six picks last year. Like, he could be poised for an MVP season. He's a sneaky long shot MVP bet, I would say, based on the way they're going to restructure the offense. And they want to work faster. They averaged the fewest offensive drives per team because of the way LaFleur was trying to slow play everything. That will change this year. There's a desire to get, you know, one or two or three more series a game for the offense. So those kind of number stats will go up too. So, you know, tough division. Minnesota will be a little better. Chicago is going to fall off. They're not going to get the kind of historic turnover rate they got last time. And Detroit is always good these past few years under Dan Campbell. So it'll be tough, but the Packers will be in the thick of it. And, you know, the Packers, we always squeeze our way into the playoffs, and then who knows what could happen.
Yeah, well, best of luck in the NFC North. It's always great to see the Packers excel at Lambeau Field, the frozen tundra, but not too much because my Seahawks have a repeat to do.
Do you think they can take out the Rams? Like, you talk about a tough division. Like, holy smokes, the NFC West is something.
They got over the Rams last year with some great luck, including that. Famous 2-point convert in overtime in Seattle. They could do it again if luck's on their side, especially with new ownership. But Mike McDonald, the defensive-minded coach, has more tricks up his sleeve and kept the core together from last year. As long as Sam Darnold and the team can stay healthy, they can do it again.
No, like that's always the biggest thing in the NFL, right? Like the healthiest teams are the ones that win the most. So the Packers had to run a bad luck last year. We're hoping they can stay healthy this year. And, you know, not a Seahawk fan, but hey, much rather have them win than the 49ers or the friggin' Rams.
Mm-hmm. Jordan Bateman from the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association and one of the participants in the 000 Summit, the White Spot meeting on August 26th on what to do with the free enterprise movement here in British Columbia. British Columbia politics is never dull. So thanks again for joining me on the podcast, and we'll keep an eye on what happens with the Conservatives under Carrie Lynn Findley as the legislature looms in October.
Yeah, thanks for having me anytime.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast from the Peony Fair at Hastings Park, the 116th edition through Labor Day, September 7th. Follow on social media. We're on X, Threads, and Blue Sky. Follow the YouTube channel for the Breaker videos and sign up for the free email newsletter, bobmackin.substack.com. Become a paid subscriber, get early access to podcasts. Thanks again, and until next week.